Philip.
What up, Mac Daddy?
Well, I should be the Mac Daddy if I still had my sunglasses on, but you know, I'm just living the dream. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. We donated some sun to you guys up in Portland. It's rainy and overcast. We swapped weather.
I know. For a little while. You donated the sun and we donated the rain, which we're all happy to do.
Yeah, I mean, we need it. We had a super wet winter last year, and it was a mixed blessing. It kind of restored some of the water tables and addressed the drought a little bit and set us up for a wonderful fire season this year. Yes. Hell of a fire season.
Funny how that works. When plants grow more, they burn more.
Yep. Yep.
Anyway, yeah.
Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you too. Yeah. I have some close friends in Santa Barbara, so it's been a very wild ride for them there. The Thomas fire has not been kind.
Mm. Has that extended up to Santa Barbara?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, mostly San Ynez, all those rolling hills full of dry brush and grass. But, yeah, I mean, even when I left there in there being Santa Barbara in 2011, Lake Kachuma was nearly dry at that point. So one could speculate that it would only get worse over time. You know, if you believe in like things getting hotter and stuff like that, I don't know.
If you believe in science and stuff like that and measuring.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like the jury's still out. We're not all on board with this idea. That would be a podcast I could add a lot to. This will be the last thing I say about this quick diversion. On Facebook, there was a very, internet famous, let's say internet marketer who posted a question and he said, "Do you believe in climate change?" And I thought the nature of the question was so absurd that it's like, you know, that it would be akin to something that was not provable or observable in any possible way, like Santa Claus or God or something like that, right? Like this idea that, you know, do you believe in it? I was like, you know, first of all, who cares what you believe? It doesn't much matter. And second of all, here are like five really compelling reasons that you can't argue with because they're true. So anyway, I'll step off my soapbox now.
I'm seeing if this flat earth rocket guy, the guy who's going to launch a homemade rocket so he could finally prove once and for all that the earth is flat. I don't see any news stories later than about Thanksgiving 2017.
Well, he did delay his launch because there were problems with the physics of the rocket. Now, the irony of that is so high that he's relying on physical science and engineering in order to have a safe flight. Because after all, when his life is on the line, maybe science matters. But, you know, when it comes to whether or not he believes the shape of the earth is round, that doesn't matter. It's very interesting.
All right. So we said we were going to talk about 2018. What's the right word to go after that? Goals, intentions, plans, dreams, hopes?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I struggle with naming this episode because I don't like the idea of New Year's resolutions because it implies, hey, I failed at a bunch of stuff before, and now I'm just going to wipe the slate clean and start over. And really, accomplishment is about concerted effort and habits, as you know. And you had an email like this recently, Philip. Go ahead.
Yeah. So on that note, let me kick things off with a question to you that I'm ripping from something I saw Kai, our mutual friend Kai Davis, post in a Slack channel somewhere. He said, one of his questions was, what are you most proud of in terms of what happened in your business or your life in 2017? I have my answer to that. What's yours?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. Why don't you go first? It's like,
okay,
you order your food first and I'll go second.
I'll buy you some time.
Okay.
I am most proud of the fact that my transition away from work for hire, done for you services to advisory services, there's a little flag I can plant in August 2017. That's the last time I took on a client where what I was doing looked like work for hire. Meaning, I think what it was writing some web copy for somebody. and that whole category work for hire, there is nothing wrong with it. I wanted a business where I'm selling advisory services. And that's when it happened, was August 2017. So that is the thing I think I'm the most proud about, because my style for embracing that kind of those big changes is, as soon as I have a vision for how it could work, I'm like, well, let's do it. And that's something I would actually not advise most people. Most people I would say, okay, you know, do you have any runway for this? You know, what's your plan? I just kind of dove into it. Not in August. It's not like it was a crisp overnight change. It was something that had been building and developing for a while, but that's where I can, you know, put a little pin in the map and say that's when it happened, or a little marker on the timeline. And that is the thing I'm the most proud about, because I know, you know, firsthand, like I didn't have to go through it to know this, but it's not an easy change. No one was saying, well, Philip, you, this is a kind of business you should build. It's, well, that's not entirely true the way I phrased it. There are other people who have businesses like this, and I wanted that kind of business. So I was kind of emulating what I saw other people do. So that's my answer.
Yeah. So I don't, I actually have something similar. So I think, you know, I'm really proud of, in, it was either April or May, I made the decision to not pursue copy work anymore. Now, it's not to say I haven't done any since then.
Sure.
But I made the decision to pivot in my business, which meant parting ways with my partner because he still wanted to do that business indefinitely. I think I'm proud of the way I ended that. Like he's in a better position than I was when we left.
Yeah.
And I feel really good about that. Not to say I just did it for selfish reasons, but that's part of it. But I wanted him to not have a rough landing, and he didn't.
Yeah.
And I also feel very proud of pursuing a new idea, even though it didn't work out, and then quickly pivoting back to where, you know, really doing some soul searching and saying, what do I want to do with my professional life? What does that look like? What are the steps I need to take? And I think to your point, you know, in August for you, when you said, boy, I really just want to do this advisory stuff and I don't want to do work for hire. I don't want to do hands work, which is kind of a derogatory way of saying it, but that's kind of a common thing.
It's also a nice visual image. But it is. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, hands versus brain work. Like but there's something about saying, I'm going to go all in on this new thing, and therefore it must work out. And so I will say, I'll add a caveat to that. Philip, for everybody who's listening to this, has been doing this for years. So it's not as if overnight he said, I want to be a coach or I want to be an advisor, and clients just poured out of the sky and it all fell into place. It was the result of years of work. But I think what I found also, and I'll shut up in a second, is when I made this decision consciously, I started to ask myself, okay, if I want to do advisory work, who are all the people I already know who I can help today? And I want to go talk to them and have a conversation. And if they're open to it and want this kind of help, invite them into a coaching session. And Philip, big news, I'm very excited to share that I landed my first coaching client yesterday.
What? That's awesome.
Yes, sir. So I feel like there's a little bit of intention and focus, and there's something to change, you know, our identity and how we see ourselves. So to your point, in August, you said, okay, mentally, I'm going to make a conscious decision to change, and things have fallen into place. And I think that's a testament to how powerful that is.
Yeah. One of the things that I've reflected on in talking with different people, some people have been like, well, if this doesn't work out, here, you know, this is a backup plan. I'll get a job, or I'll blah, 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 whatever. I'll go back to that big client or whatever. And I do not have a good backup plan for if this doesn't work out. And that is simultaneously scary, but also I think it contributes to that sense that, well, it's got to work. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think that may be part of it too. Not trying to pat myself on the back too much, because it's probably kind of dumb that I don't have a backup plan. And yeah, I mean, of course, if I had to be a Walmart greeter or whatever,
oh, stop
I guess
it.
I would do that. But you know what I mean? Like,
you have better options than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Except any job would feel to me like being a Walmart greeter. So,
well, yeah, until you see your paycheck. So
I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. I suppose.
But I agree with you. I mean, I really agree with you that I think where I've been hedging is, oh, if this doesn't work out, I can always go back and do that. And therefore, I was never 100% into something. And that while I was still able to build what I think is a really respectable business for the last few years, and probably quite a bit higher than most freelancers will ever achieve, not to gloat, just to recognize that things did go well, but they weren't exactly what I wanted, and I blame myself for that. And I'm proud of the fact that throughout the year, even though it cost me quite a bit of money, this was not my best year in business, even though it cost me money, I started to pursue the things that I really wanted to do, and I feel like I'm in a great position now because of it.
Nice. So looking forward, do you think about themes or specific goals, like, you know, specific measurable, achievable, you know, SMART goals, or how do you think about moving things forward?
So, yeah. So goal setting really quickly. So, I'm a monster at goal setting, and I've been more of a little bunny at goal achieving. So I will recognize that, even with the goals in place, I haven't been the best at sticking to them. And I think the reason is I didn't consider what it would take to achieve them. And I think I overestimated the progress I could make towards them, but underestimated the accrual of what that would do for me. So let me break that down into maybe more understandable terms. So I did a different thing this year, completely different approach. I said, what do I want my life to look like in 5 years? Okay. So I have revenue goals, where that revenue is coming from, you know, so basically I have coaching, speaking, and products, products and speaking being the two primary revenue sources in 5 years.
Okay. Ooh, very, very interesting.
Why do you say that?
Because I think it's interesting. I mean, seriously, because I think that's great. And that's, because it's the first time I've heard you say that.
Yeah. And you know, now I still catch myself when people ask me, what do you do? I've said to myself, okay, I'm going to start saying I'm a writer and a coach. Cause that is what I want to do. It's right. You know, and I want to give myself permission to say that's who I am now. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. So three main revenue sources. I have goals for my business. One of them is to not have any employees except for an assistant. So I don't want anybody, I don't want to go into this with the mindset of, oh, I could just scale up by hiring a bunch of people, because I know for sure I don't want that.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't want to throw people or quote unquote manpower at it.
Yeah. Like I want to look at that problem of not enough revenue or not enough scale and say, adding people is not an option. What are my other options? Because there are plenty. Yeah. Like,
yeah, that's it's going to be a productive constraint. I also just incidentally have never formalized it quite that way. Verbal. I mean, I don't know if I've ever written that down, but now that you mention it, I'm like, oh yeah, for sure. That is like, just that I assume that I can't flap my arms and fly. I also assume I won't have employees, and I know I don't want to have to manage people. That's not part of what I want to do.
Yeah. So, you know, I have all kinds of things that I want in my business. I think those are the big ones. Like I could go into more detail, like publish a book annually, at least. And like, I have what I think is a really good idea for a book that I would go the traditional publishing route with, because I think it would have sufficient appeal. That's like a 2 or 3 year thing, right? So now I think what the 5 year thing allows me to do, if I'm looking at my 5 year goals, Then I go, okay, in order to get there, what do I need to do in the next year? And then in order to get there in a year, what do I need to do this quarter? And now all of a sudden it feels really manageable. It's like, it's not that different than where I am now versus previously when I went through this exercise, I would just say, okay, what's my 1 or 3 year goal? And I go, okay, I got to double my revenue in 3 months. How am I going to do that? And it just feels completely unattainable. And so I'm looking at it more as baby steps. And also with the SMART goal kind of mentality, it's more about what can I do today that demonstrates I'm making progress to this, or at least doing the things that would potentially allow me to get there. And that's been super productive and feels manageable. And I want to add one more thing, and then we'll go back to you. The last thing is looking at those goals and knowing the 5-year plan that I laid out, both professionally and personally. Like, I have goals there for my family and like what my personal life looks like as well. In order to achieve those, I already know what my quarterly plan or my annual plan looks like. In order to achieve that, I literally can't do anything else.
Yeah.
So now a big part of this challenge is to say no to a bunch of stuff and not take on new stuff, because it's very clear to me before we started this call, I told you that I've been Mac shopping for a new computer. That's been a distraction, right? Like that's taking away from me reaching the ultimate goals that I want to achieve. And I'm very hyper-conscious of that now, because I'm checking in every day and going, okay, am I achieving the things that I need to, so I don't fall behind on this stuff?
Nice. That's interesting. I would describe that as I'm not sure what the right label for that is, but it's definitely it's kind of backwards planning, saying, okay, here's where I want to be in the future. We need to fill in all the details about what's going to get listed from, you know, point A to that point. And that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like kind of classical planning, goal setting. And I don't say that in like a dismissive way at all.
I think it is. And I guess I'm at a point in my life, Philip, where I feel like I know what will make me happy, or at least I have a stronger vision of that than I ever have.
Yeah.
And so to extrapolate out 5 years, I think previously when I did this exercise, it was sort of like, I don't know, you know, I don't know. Like, I put a bunch of good stuff there and that sounds great to me. And now I don't feel that way. I feel like I do know what would make me happy, and I do know the types of freedoms and the trade-offs that I would make and the type of business I want to run. Like, that's all really clear. And so I think a prerequisite to all of this is to really know yourself.
That's interesting. I wonder, like, one of the things I think happens as we age is we compare ourselves less to people that we think are successful, or we think they've got what we want. And I wonder if that's true for you. Like, is your vision of your business becoming more unique and more truly not comparable to something anybody else has built? Or do you have still kind of these people where you're like, I mean, I still have this to an extent. Like, I think of David C. Baker, and I'm like, I love the business that I think he's built. Mm-hmm. And I want to build something similar, but with some differences. And so I still have kind of my, you know, North Star in terms of where I'm headed, but also I don't feel at all like jealous or like, oh God, if I could just have that, because I also enjoy the process of getting there. And I'm kind of curious how that whole thing works for you.
Well, you're interviewing me now.
I can't help it.
It's okay.
It's a thing that I do. It's like hard for me to not do it.
Yeah. So what you're doing right now is me at every dinner cocktail party I've ever been to.
Me too, also.
Yeah. My wife's always like, how do you get people to say that kind of stuff in 5 minutes? I'm like, just ask questions. Anyway, so
I should give you the list of things that people have told me that I'm pretty sure they would never tell anybody else. I think you would find it interesting. We'll do that later.
Stepmom has this effect on people too. She's very good at getting people to open up and feel comfortable. So there are still people that I look up to. So, you know, I look at Ryan Holiday, for instance, as one where I'm like, he's got a small marketing consulting practice where he only takes on projects that he loves. I think he's involved in the book in the box thing still, which is not something I would ever want to be a part of. But his writing, to me, like, some of his books are really good and I really love them. But I think what I love more than that is he's published three or four books on stoicism as like a 27-year-old guy. And I think that that's amazing that he's really written what he cares about and he goes around and speaks on that. And he's built this really lucrative business and big following by being, I would say, authentic. Now, a lot of people don't like him because they find him, I don't know, maybe arrogant or whatever, but that guy is razor sharp. And I've met him and I was thoroughly impressed. And yeah, I look at him and think, okay, there's a good model. Now, I don't want to be him. And what I've always been envious of is when I think he's 30. And so I've always been envious of people who had a very clear vision for their lives early on. So I have a friend named Zach who runs now an online business, but he also is a successful film and television editor in Hollywood. And he knew when he was like 12, he's like, I'm going to be an editor. Now, what 12-year-old says that? I mean, I always thought that
you can
crazy.
Imagine like, I want to be a fireman or I want to be an airline pilot or some, you know, kind of thing that a 12-year-old can actually relate to, but like a film editor
or like an actor or a director who even, no 12-year-old goes, I want to be an executive producer for indie films. Like it's just, it's sufficiently, and I think it shows his insight into himself from a young age. Now, funny enough, he's starting to pivot from that and think of other ways to do his career. But, you know, I've always been, you know, you asked, does it make me have regrets to look at other people and their position? And the answer is no, because I know I needed to do everything I've done in order to be where I am now. I have noticed, though, that some people make a lot of progress in their professional life. Like I have a friend who was making, say, $250,000 a year in his 20s. And I felt way behind him in that realm of his life. But I've spent way more time working on myself and, you know, going to therapy and reading every self-help book that I could get my hands on and, you know, focusing on my health and all of these things where I feel like I'm in a position now to implement all of it. And it was required to be where I am. So I still look at models. So I mentioned Ryan Holiday, another guy whose writing I'm not a big fan of. I am a fan of Ryan's writing, but Jeff Goins, I don't know if you know who that is. I think it's like Tribe of Writers or something. So he started selling information about writing to aspiring writers. And now he has a New York Times bestseller. And, or Dory Clark is another one who I just recently discovered in the last week, who's doing something very similar to what I want to do. And I look at them and go, oh, okay. So they grew an online following and they leverage that into writing and speaking and higher end consulting gigs. And that's a really interesting thing that I think I could totally do.
Yeah, for sure.
So I look at them and just kind of try to take notes, you know, like what worked, why did that work? How did they take that approach? And then reference back to my goals and say, okay, is there something I can take here that'll get me closer to where I want to be?
Well, I like Jeff Goins' website. I really like how he's done that. Real Artists Don't Starve. That's one I've heard, but not read.
Yeah.
You know, I categorize myself as a late bloomer. I know that term is used in all sorts of contexts, but like professionally, that's how I think of myself. In that I spent my 20s and 30s doing stuff that feels now like indispensable prep work for what I'm doing now. But it wasn't one of those career paths that you talk about where someone gets into something in their 20s that's super financially lucrative. And, you know, like there's the whole idea that in this country, the way that you build wealth, if you don't have a business that can build wealth, is you buy a house and you hold on to it and the value of the house goes up. Like, that didn't work out for me. I tried right. that. Like, there's all these things where I feel like the conventional way of developing a career just didn't work out for me. And then finally, in a relatively short time frame, I mean, I say finally, I'm, you know, 43, but just, you know, my late 30s, early 40s, things started to kind of click in a way that now feels like, okay, this is what it was all headed towards. And it feels like it all makes sense in context of what's happening now. But, you know, that's like halfway through a lifetime to get to that point.
Well, you still got a lot of life to live, my friend. Now, let me ask you, is there anything that you reflected on recently, say in the last few weeks, that you said, I need to eliminate this because it's not serving me or it's not serving where I really want to go?
You know, I've done variations of that, and I feel like there's not just one thing. Like, in other words, oh God, there's so many of those things.
I came to the same conclusion.
There were certain marketing activities where I felt like this is the hard thing about that is it sounds so easy when you say it, like, oh yeah, I'm just going to figure out the stuff I need to cut out. I'm just going to be so much better off without that. Like, oh, I just would be so much better off without this, you know, 10 pounds of extra body fat that I don't want. But then you start to do it. And when you do it and you're me, you say, oh my gosh, those, you know, I did two lead gen workshops, where I charged $75 or whatever. I can't remember. And I would do them on Fridays and they actually worked. People paid, they wanted to be there. They said they were amazing. That's one of the things that is in that category of it's good, but it's not good enough. Or it's effective, but it's not high leverage enough. And that's what makes this exercise for me difficult is there's so many shades of gray. It's so nuanced to say, well, I should cut that out. I mean, there's obvious stuff I should cut out, like, you know, not checking email as much, not
I got a solution,
you know, wasting
for you there.
Time on social media. Yeah. I know. I saw you put that on Twitter. It's that sort of inbox pause type thing.
Yeah.
That would be good. And I've used one of those in the past and then it conflicted with something else, yada, yada. I don't need to get into that. So there are things that I know I need to do less of, but it's the difficulty of choosing and sticking to it is made more difficult because they kind of worked. Like they weren't failures, but for me, it's a question of like stacking them up against other things that are higher leverage. I'm going to open up a mind map here real quick and try to answer this question in a more real sort of way.
Well, so while you do that, over Christmas, I got a book from my in-laws called Finish by John Acuff. Yes, it was on my Amazon wish list. Uh-huh. And I read the whole thing. And yeah. I think there are some valuable things in there. It could have been a nice meaty blog post rather than a book. But one of the ideas that really stuck with me is he uses metaphor of hiding places. And what his point was, there are things that we do that feel productive, but they're places where we go to procrastinate from doing mm-hmm. the things that we should be doing.
Right.
Now, one of those,
a sort of refuge.
Yeah. So I actually tweeted at him. He didn't reply, but I tweeted at him and said, John, I think I realized that reading is actually one of those hiding places for me. Thanks for your book. And I do realize like reading or learning or taking an online course or something like that is a hiding place for me because for sure, I know more than I need to know in order to just execute my business now. So I say I'm a creator, not a consumer right now, because that's one of the things I need to eliminate in order to continue to focus.
I think that's huge. I agree completely. Here's what's on, like, I kind of tried to flag things that I could temporarily or permanently suspend that I felt like just didn't quite measure up to the stuff that's higher leverage. I had this thing I was doing called positioning office hours. It was like a $99 a month thing. I wound that down or let it wind down through attrition. There were some services that I tried back when I was having a big freak out back in spring of 2017 because my whale client disappeared. Like some of those were, I just took those off my services page. For a while at the bottom of my website, I had an opt-in where you could pay $150 for a 30-minute, what I call the lead generation diagnostic. I took that off. I could probably, once a month I do these DevShop marketing briefings. You're going to be my guest for January. I could probably cut those out if I needed that time. I could probably stop answering questions from book readers or not answer them one-on-one, but take the question and say, I can answer this if you'll let me use it as a podcast episode.
Yeah.
Those lead generation workshops I was doing on Fridays, I could cut those out and have, pro bono. I used to do some pro bono calls with people where they would write me a question and I wanted to answer it, but I felt like email was, it would take me an hour to write a good response or take me 30 minutes to get on the phone with them. So I was doing these pro bono calls. Checking email a million times a day, spending time in Slack rooms. Those are things that I tagged as I could get rid of. And you've made some real good progress on some of those fronts.
I would say so. I will say that one thing I'm very reluctant to give up is any one-on-one time with people. But I do notice a theme, an observation from what you just said, which is most anything that requires you to be present and is below $100 or even below $400, which I think is your entry level Philip shows up kind of thing, $400 a month. It seems like you don't believe that those are good for your business at this point.
Yeah. And it scares me to say that. I just being 100% honest, it's frightening to say that because what if I'm wrong? And what if those were some kind of vital connective tissue of my business?
Yeah. And it's interesting. I've been thinking about doing some sort of low paid membership with a no-brainer level price.
Right.
With the expectation that if it's a no-brainer level price, people who are exposed to me would not think twice about doing it. And therefore I could get larger numbers, which would then be my incubation group. And some people would want coaching with me and some people would want courses. And like, that would be the most natural group of fans to like consume everything else that I do.
That was my thinking too, with positioning office hours. That was a $99 a month price point. It felt like it filled this important gap in my product offerings. And my reasons for shutting it down were that I felt like I could not show up in the way I needed to for people at that price point. I felt like they didn't have enough skin in the game. And this is obviously a generalization, right? So I'm not saying it can't work, but that was one of the reasons for me why I felt like it was something I needed to step away from. Was it just, I don't know. Again, all the people who joined it were great. It wasn't about them. It just was about kind of the dynamics of what it was.
So when you say you couldn't show up enough for them at that price point, what do you mean?
We'll say five people, signed up. That would be $100 a month in revenue for me. I'm kind of coming at this the wrong way. The real problem is I felt like if I scaled it to, let's say, 10 people a month, it'd be $1,000 in revenue, which is fine. That pays for a number of things that I need to pay for every month. That more than covers my car payment.
Yeah.
Doesn't cover my grocery bill, that almost covers my rent. So it's a non-trivial amount of money. It's fine, but it's the mental bandwidth of caring about that many more people beyond who I'm already caring about. And I don't resent one bit caring about these people, but I have to just manage my kind of cognitive budget of what I can and can't do. And I just felt like that stretched in the wrong direction.
Did you feel that that cannibalized your other service offerings as well?
Not really, because I think it was clearly differentiated enough that cannibalization wasn't a problem. I could see that being a problem if it had been designed differently or for, or if people didn't really understand where it fit. But just the structure of it was different enough that I think people understood.
Got it. Okay. Well, enough about that. So do you have any goals for 2018?
I do. I don't think of them as, well, they might be framed as goals. I think of them as themes or, you know, intentions or things that I want to have happen. They're not as structured as yours. I'm not saying that's a good thing or bad thing.
It's not a competition.
Yeah, it's that's just kind of how I tend to approach things. Here it is. I want to relax more. I want to have more fun.
I like that.
In terms of marketing, I would like to do one primary activity, which is to publish weekly the Consulting Pipeline podcast, just to get back on a weekly or twice a week publishing schedule for that. And that's lead generation for me. I feel like I have some anecdotal evidence that from a scale perspective, it's not super impressive as a lead generation approach, but from a quality of the leads it produces, it's quite impressive. Like I, you know, twice now have had people who want to start at my highest price offering after hearing me on that podcast. And so I think it does, I think it's that kind of leverage point for having impact, or I don't know, there's just something about it that feels right. And it feels like I should double down on that.
Okay. Question, because this is one of the things I decided to cut, and I'll tell you about that in a second.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not our podcast, by the way, but we could cut this if it's on the chopping block. do you find that people are reacting most positively or most strongly to the episodes where it's just you talking about what you know, or are they reacting to the interview podcasts?
Good question. I don't know. I don't know. No one's given me any, you know, anything that feels like evidence about that one way or the other. So I don't know.
Got it. Cause I think, my acquaintance and, but our mutual, contact, Mark Butler, changed my mind about how to approach a podcast. So one of my goals initially was as a way to drum up business, and I was thinking of this as consulting business, was to do an interview-based podcast. And I started thinking about how much time that takes, recruiting the guests, finding the guests, producing it all, spending a bunch of time on promotion, versus I already have a plan to publish a weekly article because I'm a writer now. I have to write. And so I thought, well, what if I just recorded that? Like, I already spent a ton of time on the content and it's going to be really good. Why don't I just record that and share that in the way that Mark shares his own podcast?
I love it.
I'm going to do that as a way to promote my content and develop. Also, as you know, the great thing about podcasts is I could do this while I'm doing something else. And in fact, everybody does. They're walking or they're commuting or something, or they're cooking, but they're not just 100% devotion to this piece of content in the way that you have to be when you read. I actually recruited something like 8 podcast guests or 10 podcast guests. And I even recorded one, and I went back to all of them and canceled the recordings and said, I'm so sorry. I put together my goals for the year. This no longer fits in. I hope you understand it's nothing personal. And of course, they all understood.
Yeah.
But that was one of the things that I decided to cut out. Cause I guess I was also feeling like the way I wanted to do it was not possible as a quick interview podcast. And I don't want consulting clients. So the purpose of it no longer applies.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes total sense. It's been a little different for me because, you know, I now have this list of 3,500 people, a very small segment of which is highly engaged. And all of my interviews come out of the list. So someone will write me and be like, dude, I read your book. It was great, blah, blah, blah. And then I did this and the results have been great. And what I will do now is say, hey, why don't we, would you mind if I interview you for the Consulting Pipeline podcast? We'll just tell that story. And so, you know, the workload of doing interviews is way different. It's just much more organic.
Well, and also it's a case study now. It's not
exactly.
It's not another exactly. thought leader. Okay, so yeah. that's different. So it I would different. I would do that also as like so my I'm working on my opening act strategy, which is the name I'm giving to partnership marketing as I see it.
Yeah.
Article right now, which is going to be like probably 4,000 words by the time I'm done. I mean, it's going to be like a small book.
Yeah, that's like 10 podcast episodes. Just a little mini series of you reading just the major sections of that piece of content.
Exactly. And now if someone listened to that or was exposed to me and had some, maybe not coaching, but interacted with my content and say, hey, I tried this and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Then I would absolutely publish that in my podcast stream. That would be a no-brainer for me and on YouTube and on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I don't know what the ratio will be for me, but when I was publishing CPP, the Consulting Pipeline podcast, daily, I would just sometimes read old emails that I'd sent to my list that I felt like would make a decent podcast. And it was just, I was shooting for 5-minute episodes. Publishing less frequently, they'll be longer, and the interviews are always longer. I could slice them and dice them, but I don't feel like doing the editing work, to be honest. So, that's why I feel like that really works well for me is it's a real fast trust builder. People just appreciate, you know, the kind of thing I'm trying to do is sort of like similar to what you're trying to do. Yeah. You're trying to help people make a change they can't make overnight. It's not a quick fix. Right. And so, you know, in the interest of serving my audience the best I can, I feel like this is one of the best tools I have. That's a nice give take in that. They get something great from it. They get this, you know, warm, friendly voice in their ear maybe twice a week. They get reminded that they're what they're trying to do is important. They get reminded it's not easy. They get, you know, different ways of looking at the problem. And sometimes I get really good leads out of it. So that's part of focusing more. The lead nurture will continue to be my daily emails. It's so easy now to do that. And I feel like the results are good enough to continue doing it. I want to spend more time on research and building intellectual property. So you've probably noticed I have this page on my website called specializationexamples.com. Yep. And just adding 3 new items to that every day I work feels mostly sustainable and in line with where I'm trying to go. And I just wanted the next big thing is I want to shift revenue more towards products and away from what I call unleveraged time, where I'm working with somebody one-on-one and there's no group component and there's no product component. It's nice to have, you know, products and the leverage time, which is like the accelerator program or doing a workshop and the unleveraged time. But I really want to shift the revenue mix while increasing revenue. away from the unleveraged time. So I'll probably try to run some workshops in 2018 to make that happen. That's and also I'm rebooting the position course and redoing that. And then a personal goal is to start playing guitar again and learn a couple songs by heart. So that's the rundown, man. Sorry it took a while. But
no, that's good. You said you didn't have official goals, but I think you do.
Well, they're not as quite as formalized. Like I couldn't tell you, okay, what's the, you know, the plan for Q1 2018.
Right.
But I think most of them are, they're the kind of guiding lights of what I'm trying to do. And, you know, every month I can kind of decompose them down into specific actions for that month.
Right. Yep. Okay, cool.
What about you?
What about me?
2018. Did I miss it? Did you already say it?
Well, so, you know, what I really want to do is, so Q1, I need to get a product out there. I'm going to try this kind of group. It's a combination of group coaching plus content. So, you know, I've gotten really great feedback on my webinars. I also feel like it's good practice for me to put together talks on a regular basis. And I get to see which ones stick, which ones are really resonant, and which ones are like kind of duds or don't fully align. I think one thing that I'm seeing is the idea that I like the most and also I know has resonance with people right now is a marketing idea. Mm-hmm. The blue ocean space in solopreneurs, though, is sales. Mm-hmm. Very few people are talking about that.
Right.
Mostly because I think solopreneurs don't want to fashion themselves as having to sell anything, even though they do. Right. So I'm sort of looking at like, okay, I can really only heavily push one at a time. Yeah. Like certainly I could have a business 2 years from now where I talk about both things because it does serve the goal. How do you increase demand for what you do and raise your rates? And right. they both serve that goal. That's
yeah,
the goal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm thinking about that, but so release a product. I have 5 verbal commitments to join my, I think I'm going to do $47 a month for the content plus group coaching, which you're nice. Smiling. Is that too low?
No, I'm smiling because you have verbal commitments to join your thing. And that's awesome.
And also, I think it's worth saying those came through having one-on-one conversations. Now I could not be bigger on this right now. Yeah. People crave contact with other people. And in fact, in some of in one of the courses that you and I were involved with, that's the number one piece of feedback I've gotten from people. When I asked them, what did you think about the whole thing? Like in retrospect, where did you really get the most value? And they're like, just being around other people like me.
Yeah, right.
Like, oh, I exist somewhere else and I'm trying something different and I get to learn from that person. And
Seth Godin has this great way of saying that. He says people want to be unlonely.
Yeah.
And that's just a more specific version of that you're talking about.
Yeah. And so, you know, I don't want to do the thing that Kai's doing where I'm having to be a community manager, but I do want to give people an opportunity to see other people like them and also maybe ask questions of each other without my intervention.
Right.
And so I have a platform to do that. So
nice.
I'm really excited about that. So that's goal number one. Goal number two is to have 3 coaching clients by the end of Q3. That looks very attainable from where I sit today. Because I got a implicit 6-month commitment already. So, you know, nothing is official until I get paid, but I do have a committed, client who has not paid yet, but is verbally committed. So that's number 2. And number 3 is, I want to have the draft of my book done, and edited twice. So that's my goal. I know that when I heard you tell me that you did the original positioning manual in 2 weeks, I was like, oh man, I should just do that. But I think.
Wait, that, I never said that. 3 months, I think, is. Anyway.
Well, you said, I think you said you drafted most of the content for it in 2 weeks. Did you not say that?
No, it's 3 months, man. You got me on a pedestal that I could never rise to.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, this is great. This makes me feel. Yeah. Human, just like you.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the more I've thought about it, the more I've tried to give myself permission to take a little bit longer so that it's better.
Okay.
And so, you know, and I'm definitely going to hire an editor. Like I'm going to hire a professional to design the art for it. Like I want it to really feel real, even though I'm going to self-publish the first one. But I'm seeing this as the way to really start to build a following around a unique idea that I'm especially good at describing. So yeah, that's my professional goal. And then personally, my Q1, let me see. I think my Q1 goal is to, I had lifting goals. I have goals to Going to walk.
You want to be able to bench press a Volkswagen Bug, right?
Unlikely, but I may be able to deadlift it at some point.
Okay. Nice.
my 5-year goal is to deadlift 700 pounds. So I have a ways to go to get there. So yeah, you know, I have lots of other goals here. Let me actually bring this up since we're talking about it. See if I missed anything. I'm sure I did.
In one of my recent emails, I linked to this Blair Ends webinar that he did back in end of November about focus.
Yeah, that was part of my inspiration to cut the podcast. Between that and, again, Ryan Holiday's book, Perennial Seller, which I do recommend to anybody listening to this. Mm-hmm. He I think he has a blog post where it's he says, like, please for the love of God, don't start a podcast, something like that. The point that he was making is, if you're going to do something, don't just slap it together. Like, be great at it and make sure that people want it.
Yeah, the world does not need another mediocre fill in the blank.
Right. And so that was one of the reasons I cut it. Okay, so 1-year plan. Okay, so by the end of the year, I want no client work whatsoever.
Okay. Do you consider coaching to be client work, or is that more work for hire that you're talking about?
Yeah. So yeah. I don't want to do any kind of production work.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Or even, so coaching, speaking, and product sales. So speaking, I think, is going to be something, you know, unfortunately, it's something that I need to start prospecting now, but it's something that I want to focus much more on in the second half of the year, because I feel all of my attention needs to go into coaching and product sales. Because, as you know, product sales, even if it's an exponential growth curve, takes a little bit longer to get going, whereas coaching could be much more immediate. So
that's right. I think your background in copywriting is going to really help with the product sales, unless you pursue like more of a mass market, traditional publishing type of approach where you're depending on others to do the marketing for you. But if you're self-publishing, doing the marketing yourself, I think that good funnel experience is going to be really, really relevant. The other thing I wanted to say real quick is, if I can give an unsolicited tip, having the goal to not do something like client work is one way to look at it. And another way to look at it is I will starve myself of the time and attention needed for client work by displacing that with the stuff I really want to do.
That's exactly right. So I have no client work as a bullet, but the first 3 goals is how much I'm going to make in product sales, speaking, and coaching, which would fully displace it. So I agree with you. I'm a fan of positive goals rather than negative goals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do rather than what you're not going to do? Right. But I think for the listeners of this podcast, I think it's, it's one that's worth sharing.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I also have a goal for the number of people opening and reading my emails every week, not a goal for the size of my list. Now, this is a little bit different. The more I think about it, the more I feel as though the size of the list does not matter. What matters is, do people care to pay attention to me? So I don't want to get caught up in like, oh, I want, you know, 5 or 10,000 people by the end of the year. What I want is people opening the email. So if I could get, so on this, I actually, after doing some math, I'm not sure this is totally feasible. I think it's possible. My goal is 1,000 people opening and reading my emails every week, which I think I'll need 2,500 to get 40%.
I love the direction you're going with that. I'm always suspicious of the numbers that are reported to me by any email marketing provider, because I just, so if I send an email on Monday and 500 people open it, which is about typical for me, between 500 and 600 opens is what's reported back by my email provider. Is it the same people, same 500 or 600 who opened it on Tuesday? I don't know. I want to throw out that you might think about replies. So like people actually hitting the reply button, that's a metric that you can absolutely track in that if there's something about your email that lets you find it in a Gmail search, and then you can just scope the, you know, like it, every Friday at 5 o'clock when the whistle blows and you slide down the dinosaur tail, you could do that kind of thing where you're like, well, let's see how many replies I got this week. And that could be a metric that's actually, I feel like, fairly reliable and trackable and a really good indicator of something, how provocative you're being or how engaging you're being or whatever.
Yeah. I was going to ask, do you solicit replies or is that something that you find just naturally happens?
Both.
Okay.
Both. It's not like every time I'm like, hey, hit reply and let me know what you think. That's a real common when you see in emails, but I feel like if the content is worthy of attention and it's talking about something that, you know, is topical and relevant, and then the replies will happen.
Yeah.
And also, as long as you follow through on those and you actually respond to people, because you can, you know, your behavior will tell people whether you actually want the replies or not. So that's something to think about. You know, as my list has grown from like 2,000 to 3,500, the number of the quantity of opens, granted, is not the most reliable metric. That has stayed almost constant across the list growth from 2,000 to 3,500. So I just want to reinforce that I think you're looking at the right stuff. I think that matters more than list size. And I have toyed with the idea of people can take my email course and then they have to choose to remain on my list. Otherwise they're unsubscribed. I've toyed with that idea.
But well, I think, yeah, the reason I have this, you know, people opening and reading my emails rather than how many people subscribe is I want to create such indispensable information for people that they wouldn't even think to go anywhere else and they wouldn't think to miss an email. That's the kind of relationship that I am putting pressure on myself to create for people, where they go, man, if you need some great advice, you should look up Liston if you're X, Y, and Z, because he can really help you. And I think that that's one of the ways that I can observe that. So that's another goal. Write 1,000 words every day. So that I publish a daily blog. I'm actually writing way more than that, which is kind of crazy to say, but I publish a daily blog post, which I was actually thinking, well, we can talk about that later. I was thinking about doing like an RSS feed on my daily blog post that goes into an email. That's a separate topic. But I'm also going to publish one long form article every week. I don't think that's going to be a long run thing that I can keep up with past this year, but I know there's a critical mass I need to create, and then produce and publish one book. And I'd like to also, I'm going to create two courses, one for winning clients, which I said is going to be more sales oriented, and one for developing an audience through content partners, which I've been toying with the title, How to Become Internet Famous, for that one. So yeah, that's it, man. Final one that you might care about is I'd like to host one live event where I teach people live and have other people like you or some of our other friends show up and help people out live. And like I said, one of the big pieces of feedback is I want to know there's other people like me. I don't want to be lonely in this journey, and I want to pick up great things from them. And I think a live event does all of those things.
Dude, if you accomplish even half of those things, it's going to be a great year. And I think you can accomplish more than half, but even half would be a good year.
I think I can do all of them, but I can't waste any time. That's for sure.
Maybe I should let you go then. This has been great. You know, politically, 2017 was like a hell of a year, but I do have this sort of sense of optimism about 2018. And again, like when we talked about this last time, the optimism I feel is like, I feel like I'm heading in the right direction, and I feel like I am have enough momentum to hopefully not get stalled out or derailed, and that makes me feel good.
Now, I do want to say something about the news, because I wasted a lot of time paying attention to the news, writing my thoughts, emailing friends. I even developed a list of over 100 people who wanted to hear from me about what I thought about politics early on in the year.
You cutting that out in 2018?
Definitely. So yeah. the point I want to make is I am all for being informed, but when you think about what impact it has on your daily life, for me at least, it was almost 100% negative, and it didn't contribute to anything good that was happening for me. And so I've decided to cut, long ago I decided to cut out the subscription list, but also just paying attention to the news, not serving my big goals, and it's not helping my family.
Yep. Yeah, I think I need to go into some of the host files on all of my devices and block CNN and a couple other places. Twitter should probably be on that list too for me.
It's the year of no, my friend. The year of no.
I can get behind that.
All right, man.
Hell yeah to that no.
I love it.
Bye.
Bye.